This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode Enhanced Reality. Hello, this is Michael Martin, one of your hosts, probably the less delightful of the two, from GamesAtWork.biz, and I'm joined by the more delightful co-host, Michael Rowe. Hey, Michael.
Hi, probably the less delightful co-host, depending on the day.
Well, we will be aiming to see who can be more delightful on this show, I'm sure, because we've got ways of making your reality that much better.
It's on.
So let's start with one of my favorite tools in the world these days, Zoom. So for those of you who don't know what Zoom is, it's not the Room Zoom Zuma Zoom song. It is a method for directly connecting people with video, with audio, with an ability to record machine to machine, operating system to operating system, mobile to desktop, in a super deluxe, easy way. And Michael, you saw this article that was published about their most recent, and actually their very first conference, and something fun they announced there.
Yeah. I was, just like you, I've been a big fan of Zoom for a long time. I think I used it 3-4 years ago on some internal projects. And I really, really like it. And so this is actually from, Zoomtopia, their user conference, which evidently it's their first annual discuss.
It could be their first bi-decade.
Well, this is the thing. Sorry, I got a rat hole for a second. There was another podcast that I listened to and called Upgrade. And the first year that they did this one yearly event, the one host is like, it's our first annual. And the other one's like, no, it can't be the first annual, because to be annual, we had to have done it last year and this year. So next year will be the first annual. Anyway, sorry. So discuss amongst yourselves. So it's their first user conference. We don't know if it's annual or not. They showcased the ability to fully integrate augmented reality into meetings. And so they talk about using one of the headsets, like the Meta, and having each person in the Zoom environment using the headset so that you could actually more accurately represent everybody sitting around the same table, if you think about it. Because Zoom's great for distributed teams, especially if everybody is uniquely in a different place. Mm-hmm. Again, just like many multi-person conferencing things, if more than one person is in a single location, they tend to coalesce amongst themselves, and you get pods, for lack of a better term. But Zoom is really great of engaging video, the ability to have it dynamically identify who's speaking, zoom them up on the screen, do desktop sharing, etc. Just like Google Hangouts, WebEx can do some of that. Lots of different tools, but Zoom just makes it really, really simple and really, really easy. And if they can take that same level of integration that they've done with tools like Slack or Workplace by Facebook and other things, and integrate pure augmented reality into this. This is really, really cool. And the other half of the same article is what they're trying to do, what they call their flirtation with artificial intelligence. And it's funny because I was talking to somebody about 6 months ago about what could you do with natural language processing in a corporate setting.
Well, you could have bots attend meetings on your behalf, and you don't even need to go anymore.
No,
that would be great.
You could have them automatically do the transcript, identify action items, and have the action items entered into the tool of choice to cause follow-up.
Or you could send a bot to your meeting, and then that bot could talk to another bot, and they could decide what needs to be done, and then have a virtual agent actually go do it.
Yeah. I think we saw that. Oh, God, what was the movie where all the people were going to class, and they slowly, as the course went on, less people would show up, and they would have their cassette recorders there recording the professor.
And right, and all the cassette recorders there.
The reel-to-reel at the front of the classroom playing the lecture, and all the cassette recorders there listening to the lecture.
Well, you know, I was reading some of the comments from this as well, and I had a look at the Meta helmet and to see what it looked like. The first thing that struck me was this is an awful lot like the Microsoft HoloLens type of experience. It's a large thing that you put on your head, and it's got a visor that comes down that it's transparent and you can see through it, but it'll be a way to display things that aren't there to be there. And one of the commentators on this article in TechCrunch was saying, hey, interesting, fun, but I can't see teachers doing this. I could see this maybe in a corporate setting, but not so much with teachers or others, because people are not going to put something like this on their head. What are your thoughts, Michael? Do you think regular people will put things like this on their head or not so much?
This is Gen 1.1. Generation 0.5 was Google Glass, which was small, and not as
powerful. And too small, though.
Very obtrusive and annoying, and people freaked out on it.
Yep.
And it had a camera facing in both directions, outward, and that's what people freaked out about. This, if you actually look at Meta or HoloLens or the other ones, this thing has three sensors looking out. One camera and the other two probably IR and other depth sensing technology.
Mm-hmm.
So until we get over the creep factor, I think it will be exclusively in two environments, enterprise and entertainment, right?
Yep.
So going to a theme park where you know that you're being filled the whole time anyway, right?
Sure.
As soon as people get over the creep factor, and as the technology keeps getting more and more less bulky, I mean, think of cell phones in the 1980s, right? They were bricks. They were giant bricks. And now you can have your watch with cell capabilities on it, right? So as it has shrunk in size, become more powerful, and less of a stigmatism to see people using it, right? That's when I think this will show up in schools, this will show up in everyday use, because the basic use cases that we've been talking about forever are things like, I'm horrible with people's names.
Yes.
That front-facing camera, if it can just, you know, look at the person and remind me who they are and why we're having this conversation, that's huge. And now you layer on top of it augmented reality and the ability to virtually interact together with the same virtually physical thing. Like the one example you and I were talking about before the show today about, you know, the person manipulating the car, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a model of a car. It looks real. You know, the light and the way things shine, opening up the hood or the doors. I mean, and then it blows up to the size of a real car, and the lady is lifting it up and looking around it and looking underneath it. It's like, wow, that's just amazing.
Yeah, and then she gets into it and virtually drives away. No.
But, well, why not?
But those use cases are coming, right? I mean, those use cases are coming, and as more and more come, and as more and more people see value in it, I think all the other things fall away, and those things will be driven by two primary things. One, the cost.
Yeah.
Right? This is a $1,500 headset, same as Google Glass was, 4 years ago?
Yeah, exactly.
And the stigma factor. And that stigma factor is Do people understand the technology and how it's being used well enough? I mean, people went nutso over the Snapchat glasses.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And those had a camera, front-facing.
But they were cute.
Oh, so if we just put them with big googly eyes, it'll be cute?
Well, I mean, look, you don't want to have a stormtrooper's helmet that you're walking around with because people will kind of get a little weirded out by that, right?
Well, it depends. Which side of the empire are you on?
Yeah. That does depend. It does.
I mean, is this the Empire's stormtroopers, or is it the what were they called in the early ones before the Clone Wars, when they were thought to be good, and then Order something came on and
First
killed
order.
All the Jedi?
Yeah,
First Order, right?
Yeah, right.
When they were truly were all clones of Boba Fett's father.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I mean, we've touched this point on more than one occasion, and it all boils down to not wanting to look like a goofball. But a goofball with superpowers, I mean, look at it. Every time you see a superhero, they're dressed up in some weird costume.
Yeah,
they're wearing.
You're not going
to
walk
boots.
Down the street wearing tights and a cape. But if you could fly, you might
do
it. But
if you could fly, yeah. Yeah. Who are you talking to, buddy?
That's right.
I can fly.
If I could jump tall buildings in a single bound and I was wearing tights and you made fun of me, I think we'd have a different conversation.
Yeah, probably so. There'd be some sand kicked on that for sure. So I'm with you. This is early generation stuff yet, but it's easy to see where the world is going as we take more and more steps to natural interfaces, which, based on what you and I have personally experienced and where we see things are going, there will be a tight integration and connection at optic nerve, neural, et cetera, other levels that you won't need to use something that will fool your eyesight or your sense of smell, or there'll be ways to programmatically have, for lack of a better term, a hyperlink that will allow for you to smell, experience, see, et cetera, something that isn't there, but it is there, but it really isn't there, without all having all kinds of hooks and wires and electronic-y things attached to your body to fool it into it. That will come.
Yep.
So interesting stuff. And this Meta website, I hadn't gone through it in detail before, but I have to say I'm really impressed. These guys understand it, and they've got it moving in the right direction.
Considering the current state of the technology, it's pretty impressive.
So along those same lines, you've been playing with ARKit as an early developer, early adopter on iOS 11 on the iPhone and iPad, and you found a new thing, at least new to me, called Sketchfab, to enable people to play with a variety of 3D models. So what's your experience been? What do you think is good about it? What's the story?
So Sketchfab's been around for some time. They're a big platform for designing and selling or sharing your 3D models. Mm-hmm. Think of, if you've done 3D printing, you might have used, I'm going blank on the name of the site, but Makerware Thingiverse, right? Thingiverse is a great place to download models. Well, what Sketchfab has done is they've had an iOS app for some time. They have an Android app that you could go in and browse and search for models and, you know, resize them, look at it from all sides, you know, rotate, blah, 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 right? So given the release of iOS 11, they added in for people a much improved version of their app, which allows you to click a button and say, okay, show me it in the real world. And I've been playing with this week just to kind of see how it behaved. I have an iOS 11 device. It's an iPhone 7 Plus, so top of the line from last year. Now that the 8 is out and the X will soon be out, maybe be out it's by the no time you listen to the show.
Top, no longer the top of the line.
But, I mean, it's got some serious horsepower in it. And I've noticed, depending on lighting and the designs of the floor that I'm pointing at, it sometimes has difficulty with ARKit in this Sketchfab app of identifying the surface. One of the really powerful things of ARKit is once it identifies the surface is to get the model to stick on that surface. So as you zoom and rotate and move around it physically in space, it looks natural sitting there, right? And so the I've also noticed, again, 1.0 of the app, 11.0 of the operating system, last year's device, boy, my iPhone gets hot when it's running. So it's cranking through some computation, right? It's really burning down the battery. And again, I think that has to do with the fact that this is, you know, last year's chipset. It's not the Bionic, as they call it this year, which is specially tuned to AI and to augmented reality. But it was still impressive. It was still impressive, right? They have just tons and tons of models. And, you know, it's not just one vendor's models, like the IKEA app, which lets you take your IKEA furniture and put it in your space and see what it's going to look like in your house. Or, you know, it's not just a Pokemon Go sitting there kind of sort of in in virtual space, or sorry, in augmented space. This is cool. And the creators that build these models, it's a great way to showcase your work.
Yeah, I'm just kind of exploring the site a little bit, and I'm very impressed with the kinds of models that are just on the homepage and that they're available for sharing and distribution. Didn't there used to be, I'm thinking about Second Life too, there were other model spaces where you could go and get a whole bunch of different models.
Yeah, there's a lot of companies that make their whole business model around selling three-dimensional models or 3D models for games. We bought some in some of the work that we were doing back in the virtual worlds days 10 years ago for specific customer builds that we were doing, right? Where we didn't have somebody talented enough to completely design a BMW, Z3. So, hey, there's a Z3 in this store. We bought the model, right?
Right.
And then we had it refactored in order to be the correct model, object model that could be used in Second Life or in Active Worlds or in There.com or in Forterra or whatever virtual world platform that you were using. So there's a lot of them out there. Again, the value of Sketchfab is it's that community-based thing, so people can, you know, design their own and sell it there. And as you say, there's some really, really cool ones in there.
Yeah, exactly. And the ability to rotate them around and see them in all the dimensions and potentially then manipulate, change color, change texture. I mean,
zoom
this is
in, zoom
slick.
Out.
This is
now,
really, really slick.
Put that on your phone, put it in the real world, size it up, walk around it, right?
So remember when we were very much into
November.
Our 3 days, our major experimentation in the 3D and the virtual universe, 3D universe, 3D virtual universe space, how one of the things that was certainly problematic was objects being available for sale on the one hand, and then on the other hand, that objects were duplicatable because the models were there. They could be essentially screen scraped, rendered,
yep,
and then used from there. So just thinking use case ahead, and I remember hearing something about this before, about like works of art where people could take a phone and the 3D camera capability of the phone and essentially take a model of something, the artist's intellectual capital, essentially, and be able to easily duplicate it and then have a virtual use of it.
Yeah, there's a lot of different apps right now on iOS, and I'm sure they're on Android too. I think Adobe makes one. there are others where you literally just take 4 or 5 pictures of something and it will, based off of those pictures, identify depth and then stitch the object in the center of those pictures that it identifies into a mesh, into a 3D model mesh. So yeah, it would be interesting is not the right word, and easy is probably not true, but if you could stream the Sketchfab model into some other app, you might be able to capture it because you've got all the data points.
Wow. So, okay. So mind-blowing thing here. You ready for this?
Blow my mind.
If I'm an ethical user of 3D objects and I would like to ensure that the artist, company, individual, whatever that produced them, put them on the blockchain.
Yeah, that was done 3 or 4 years ago with what is it, Mariah Heap or whatever. What's the name of the one artist who put her albums out that way?
Yeah. So that way you know the provenance, you know that you've got a legit copy, you double know.
And you disaggregate the platform players who resell your models for you.
Right, because you're now able to get them essentially directly from the source and or from another model. So if I like this model, I can buy it knowing I'm paying and the money is going to the appropriate source.
It's just a model.
It's only a model. Super deluxe cool. Loving this. All right, so moving along in our playlist for today, there's a Macworld article that you found that kind of links our first stories, our Sketchfab story, the Meta story are all together. And this Macworld article is talking about an opinion piece suggesting that Apple is working on a, they call it a heads up, but we all know better than that, display.
I was wondering how long it was going to take you to hit the head up display comment.
Yeah, well, it took us a while the first time, you know, but we're like, we know this.
It's so actually acceptable to use either term nowadays. But
oh, really?
Yes.
We've evolved, huh?
We have evolved. The English language continues to evolve. Yeah, so this is Dan Morin. He's a contributor over at Macworld. I think he used to be one of the editors of the paper magazine. I actually got to this article via Six Colors, which is a blog that I follow by Jason Snell, the former editor-in-chief of Macworld magazine, who's now on his own. And basically, the argument that he makes, and it's logical, is it used to be that computers were big and expensive, and when the cell phone first came out, even early iPhones, people were like, oh, man, that's just a toy. And it evolved. It got better. It got faster. And now most people, really, their mobile device is their computer. But it's still something that's, let's face it, big and bulky, relatively speaking. And with all the enhancements around UI, around augmented reality, etc., maybe what's happening, if you look at Apple's product line, is that they're trying to push more and more of that power to your wrist. And once they do that, then you need a head-up display to realize the power of the computing that you carry with you. And that is kind of the logical path. And if you look at it, he's shown a picture of the iPhone X. And overlaying the real world, it's still something big that you have to hold out in front of you. It gets heavy holding it out in front of you. It's an awkward interface, even though it's incredibly wonderful and powerful, blah, 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 blah. And I think it goes back, as you say, to our early comments about, the Meta, right? The Meta headset's really, really cool. It's expensive. It's big and bulky. Wouldn't it be nice if I had some kind of head-up display? And Apple might be the company to put the design in place and push existing technologies from a manufacturing perspective to the place where it's now containable and usable in a very, very small, lightweight form factor, just as they did with multi-touch on the phone.
And makes sense, right? There's a natural evolution that you're moving the compute power from where it is to where it needs to go.
Or you're removing the compute power as a constraining factor. Maybe it's all up in the cloud. Maybe it's all on
it
your wrist.
It could be right? Everywhere. Yeah, exactly.
Maybe it's like a wireless charger and it's just floating in the ether around you.
That gets us pretty close to our end of job for our changing reality musings for today.
Yes.
And as we're wrapping things up, anything, any last words, things you're playing, something going on for you?
Now, the only thing interesting out there is, and we'll just throw this in the show notes, you and I were both fans of Ren and Stimpy, you know, Happy, Happy, Joy, Joy. And I saw an article this week over at Slash Film about a Kickstarter that's going on for a documentary about the making of Ren and Stimpy.
That'll be so cool.
It's log, all right, man. It's log. Well,
it's a log leaning against an electric fence, right? Look, my one thing that I will just touch on briefly is something, you know, I was like, I've turned these games off and I've deleted them and somehow or another I found my way into one again. So this one's the Star Trek one by the Disruptor Beam guys. Been around for a while. You get characters from various Star Trek. Did I say Star Wars before?
You did.
I meant to
just
say
like
Trek.
I said Kickstarter and it's really an Indiegogo.
Whoops. So, anywho, it's Star Trek, not Wars, and you get to play these various characters, fly around different class ships and have some fun, and I think I need to just delete it off my machine because it's not, you know, really, it's fun, but it's not that much fun.
You can enjoy it guiltily for a little while.
Maybe a little bit. Just been a teeny bit. All right, so that's what I'm playing.
Cool.
I hope you're having a good listening experience, our dear listeners. We would love to interact with you more. We have lots of ways to do that, and we're looking to you to share with us what you'd like to hear more about as you and we continue playing games at work. So
sounds
until
good.
The next time, we will see you.
Bye.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.